This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
When I think of all the worries people seem to find, and how they're in a hurry to complicate their minds by chasing after money and dreams that can't come true, I'm glad that we are different. We've better things to do. May others plan their future. I'm busy loving you. One, two, three, four.
Sha la 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 la, live for today. Sha la 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 la, live for today.
And don't worry about tomorrow.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Nuga. Been to a couple shows recently and saw the most violent wrestling match I have seen in the year 2020 in a match that only involved one piece of plunder, and that was between two of my dear friends, one of whom I wanted to have on, a young up-and-coming wrestler on the scene, a man with an amazing story. Welcome to the show, Nolan Edward.
Oh, I'm welcome. I didn't realize the name of your podcast. I really like it.
Oh, thanks, dude. Appreciate it, man. Yeah.
You said it. I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot.
It's because I don't want to wrestle, and I don't want to be involved in wrestling. So I only want to sit in row one, seat one, and that's as far as I want to go in wrestling.
Well, it's unique. I like it.
Thanks, dude. So you have a unique story, actually. You grew up kind of straddling the U.S. and Canadian borders, and talk about how you kind of came up in wrestling and what made you fall in love with wrestling first as a kid.
Oh boy. Yeah, you kind of said it a good way. Like, it was just like kind of like a weird in between of area B and area A. Growing up, there wasn't a lot of wrestling influence besides maybe I think I just like caught it every once in a while on TV growing up. Before, I'd say around late elementary school, so maybe like fourth or fifth grade, maybe I was around 7 or 8 is when I first got like really into wrestling and started following it like, kind of like religiously, which ended up me through the back and forth of the U.S. and Canada kind of being that like the one constant in my life, so to say, being wrestling. And so I'm trying to remember where I was headed with it. It was kind of like the only constant that I had was pro wrestling. So trying to balance it with moving back and forth, to have that there kind of is what really led me to want to do it. And when I was 16 years old in Flint, I had just got my license. I drove to a wrestling school twice a week in Flint, Michigan. I weighed like 90 pounds. I was not a wrestler. I was 90 pounds soaking wet. I ended up getting able to do music. I was able to do music for the shows for a summer before going back to school, and that's when I kind of got away from wrestling, or at least trying to be a wrestler. I would still watch it, but I got away from trying to be a wrestler when I realized my size. And so when I was graduating school, I went to a film school and ended up getting film jobs to and fro states, Canada. Going back and forth, getting a job for MTV, which ended up being able to afford wrestling school to go back to that school in Flint. A grown boy this time.
A grown boy, yeah. 91 pounds now, right?
Not 90 pounds.
Well, talk about working for MTV, because that sounds really cool. Like, that's definitely not a path that many wrestlers take. Working for MTV. What shows did you work on? And, talk about that experience.
So I was able to work on the show Catfish, so reality TV. Oh, cool. And, yeah, sometimes when I say Catfish, there's a lot of questions that come with it when people ask me stuff. But I was able to work on Catfish. It was supposed to be a part-time thing, actually.
How real is that show?
Oh, it's very real.
Is it really?
How, like, what you asked just now is typically the first question I hear. Mm-hmm. And I always respond with, it's very real. it's quite terrifying at times because it's so real to a point where you don't know what can happen. It's unpredictable. And I was able to do that. It was supposed to be a part-time thing, and then I ended up going for a few, and then I ended up working for a whole season of it. And during a break, that's when I was able to go to wrestling school with the money I made from MTV. And then once I got done with that wrestling school, I started wrestling religiously, like every weekend, like kind of the same areas, and then ended up going back to Windsor, worked on some film stuff every now and then still. Mm-hmm. But I would say the biggest I got into actual set and consistently working for film was my time at MTV.
So what this fascinates me, the catfish thing. What was your role in the show? Were you like helping to set these people up? Like what did you do?
Oh, I've actually never been asked that. So I was a camera operator.
Okay.
When I first started, I was a production assistant, and that's, some people know it very well, some people don't know the term, but that's very much so the, I'll go get the coffee,
mm-hmm.
and I will get whatever they need. Like, I'll go get lunch for them. I'll go get coffee. I was the runner, so sure. to say. And that was all I was supposed to be, but one day while I was on set, they lost a cameraman who was just done. He was just done with the show. And so I stepped up and didn't fail, and that's what ended up getting me my spot there permanently for as long as I wanted it, so to say.
So it's got to be kind of scary because, I mean, the people on the catfishing end of Catfish are crazy manipulative and downright terrifying and psychopathic. And you're just armed with a camera and you're going into these people's homes. How absolutely scary is that moment?
Like I said before, it's terrifying because it's unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have like the biggest buildup. This is how I describe it. You could have the biggest buildup.
So you were mentioning that you're carrying a camera and you could have the biggest buildup to going into someone's house. And then, from there?
You could have the biggest buildup. I did not know I lost you right then.
That's okay.
You could have the biggest buildup going in and then nothing happen. And you could have the smallest buildup going in and something intense happen. And it's unpredictable. Like, it could be revealed that it's someone in the family. It could be revealed that it's an ex. It could be revealed that something. And they could just look at them and say, oh, wow, this sucks, and walk away. Or they could be least expecting it and it's something happens and it's the biggest blow up.
What did that teach you about human emotions and playing with human emotions? And did that convert anything into playing with human emotions into your promos in wrestling, I guess? Because there's manipulation going on there to the nth degree.
I wouldn't say the best way for me to describe it, what I took from those experiences was, it made me, I definitely wasn't afraid anymore to be in unfamiliar areas,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. Like, some people aren't social, and I'm very much not social, but it's almost like working in that kind of environment made me, whether I wanted to or not. Like, I was forced. And, I mean, it definitely teaches you not to be a creep. My biggest takeaway is just like, there were so many creepy things that would happen. My biggest takeaway, I'd say, is it taught me not to be that. And as far as wrestling promos go, whenever I try to approach anything, because there's a lot that I love about wrestling, but there's a lot that I think I hate. And so promos is one of the biggest things I actually hate about wrestling.
Sure.
And not a lot of people know that, because I don't like the typical let me say who I am for these reasons, or the I'm going to get intense in front of a camera. If anything, whenever I try to cut a promo, I just try to, and I've tried the typical way to go about it, right? Like the steps that there are and everything, but it didn't work for me. And so whenever I try to think about a promo, I just try to think about how I'm talking to you right now. I was like, I just want to have a conversation with a possible audience.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, and those are usually the best promos are the ones that are most relatable. So that's, I mean, that you're on the right path there.
I think I have enough life experience, whether it be through Catfish and everything else that I've done, that made me just think, well, I could just have a conversation.
Sure. So was Catfish, I mean, when you were working for Catfish, was wrestling always in the back of your mind? Like, I'm just doing this to save up enough money for wrestling school? Or was it, you know, was wrestling the end game?
Yes. So okay. When I got the job with MTV, I the first thought that went through my head was, wow, I don't know how much I'm going to be making, but I'm sure it'll be enough to pay for wrestling school.
Okay, so wrestling was always the goal.
Yes, and I wasn't wrong. It was enough to pay for wrestling school. And that's why, I don't know if I mentioned it before or not, but that's why during that downtime that I had in between seasons, I was able to go to wrestling school. That way when MTV came calling back saying, oh, we're ready for the next season, I did not take the job because I was already actively wrestling.
So the eggs have always been in the wrestling basket then, as far back as you can remember.
Yes,
that's awesome. That's absolutely great.
There was like times where I lost so many friends, or like got into so many fights with family or anybody at the time, and because I was from an orphanage, so family is just it's a lump sum of random human beings at random times, but. I recall getting into so many arguments just in general about wanting to be a pro wrestler that when it came time to do it, there was no question. I was like, okay, this is it. This is what we're doing.
So tell me about your training experience. You know, cause I mean, you're not a big guy, you know, but you're determined as hell. How is it in comparison to people there? Who do you train under? Talk about, you know, what you went through.
So when I first started training, that where I went to when I was 16 years old, and when I went to the same place when I was able to pay for it again when I was older after the MTV gig, was a spot called Pure Pro Wrestling in Flint. When I first initially started training there, it was in an abandoned barn in Flint, Michigan.
Sounds very cold.
It was just a ring and a barn. Then it became a ring and a church. It was like a church's warehouse, and that it eventually became they had their own spot at a really nice ice hockey rink. I originally trained there under the trainers that I accredit to for my training are Nick Zero, Ace Evans, Dylan Knight. Fast forward to Truth Martinis, House of Truth Wrestling School in the Detroit area. I spent a little time there. I can't credit that because the deal was Truth is very nice to let people go through his school if you're in the area and you are previously trained. So I was able to stop in there for a good amount of time.
So his is more finishing school then?
I'd say so, yes. Mm-hmm. And then when I needed to learn more, I was able to go back to Windsor, places that I'd been before, and that's when I went to the Can-Am Dojo when the head trainers there were Aiden Prince and Johnny Bravo, before Johnny Bravo was a manager on Impact. He was my trainer, and then really fast forward the training, the most recent training and the current training is at Crux Wrestling School
in Tullahoma.
I meant to say Tullahoma. Under Kerry Awful.
Yeah, don't besmirch the name of Tullahoma now. They'll get all up in arms.
I didn't want to say Nashville and then people realize it's not Nashville. I wanted to be correct as possible.
It could not be more night and day from Nashville.
It is definitely Tullahoma.
It is definitely Tullahoma. Most certainly. So you get trained and you're starting to, you know, to get your first bookings. But how long was it after you you trained that you go out on your first shows, and what was the Michigan independent scene like, and the Ontario independent scene like?
Well, I got bookings pretty quick. Okay. The company Flint ran their own shows, and I was training for around 2 months by the time I had my first match. And so that's quick. Mm-hmm. And I stuck it out there for a little bit before I started going to the Metro Detroit area. And then I spent my time there and got what I could get out of that area. I love wrestling in Canada. I have this promotion in Kitchener, which is a little shy of Toronto, that I call my home in Canada. It's called Crossbody Pro Wrestling. Just the atmosphere there, I'd say there's nothing like it. But as far as wrestling goes in Detroit, the scene is okay. I didn't mind it. I definitely prefer traveling over sticking to one area, which you know that. I could be told the show is 10 hours away, and I'm very, very much not afraid of that. But it's kind of night and day, kind of like Tullahoma and Nashville. So wrestling in Canada across the border from Detroit is very much different, despite it only being a little bit away, because it's just a bridge or a tunnel. But it's very different, but I'd prefer Canada over Detroit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what do you prefer, the Canadian scene or the Michigan scene? Yeah,
well, I prefer Southern wrestling.
Interesting.
Oh, I love wrestling in the South, but if I had to pick between Detroit, like the Upper Midwest, and Canada, oh, Canada.
And why is that?
Over Canada?
Well, why can't? What is it about the Southern Canadian scene? What is it about Ontario?
I love wrestling in the South because everybody's hungry, and I feel like people aren't okay with being just content.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's people like that in the South, but I haven't met them because I'm constantly traveling to different promotions in that area that I can, to the point where I'm surrounded by the people that really want to get this going for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Is it like that in Canada too?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So I think there's a lot of comfortability in that area, just like there is in any area. But everybody's, this is no pun intended, the nicest people you'll meet. Everybody's happy you're there. It doesn't feel like a toxic environment. Is there cliques? Yes, there's going to be cliques wherever you go in wrestling. But wrestling in Canada it's a more accepting feeling than toxic areas in other places in like certain states.
Well, it's because they're Canadian. And Canadians are the best people on the planet.
I'm not going to argue on
that. Yeah. So from there, you took a very interesting career path. How did the association with Impact come up, and how did that all come about?
So when I left MTV, it was very much known in the wrestling world of my background. People that knew me knew my background, which actually led to whenever Evolve was in town, I was able to film ringside with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or do hard cam or sell merch and get in pretty well with everybody at that crew. And while I was training at the Can-Am Dojo in Windsor, it's associated with Impact. That's Impact's dojo. And through word of mouth and everything, trainers letting certain people know about my background, I was able to send a reel over, do this, and go through all the steps to show them my work or whatever. And I hadn't done anything in the film industry for almost 2 years at this point. So when I left doing the little bit of work that I did every now and then for Evolve, I didn't think I was going to ever do anything film related and wrestling again unless it was for myself. And then that quickly changed when I found myself moving to Nashville working for Impact because they needed producers, and I was able to drop everything and kind of go to a new area I'd never been before.
So who's in charge at this point in Impact? Who are the power players? What is your role? Talk about, what's going on in Impact at this time.
So in charge that got me the job was Scott D'Amore.
Is this Anthem?
This is Anthem.
Okay, yes. Sure.
Sorry, I didn't know you wanted me to go that deep.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. No, I didn't know if this was like post Anthem buyout or if this was still Jared or.
This is Anthem, and this is Anthem right before Access TV because okay. We got to Access TV. Getting on Access TV is what got me the job.
Sure.
I remember the first week I was in the offices in Nashville was around the time we were getting ready to go to Access TV.
Sure.
But it was Anthem. I got the job through Scott DeMore, the vice president. And when I was in Nashville, I was more the... I wouldn't say like a production assistant like I mentioned earlier. I was able to edit packages for Bound for Glory and stuff like this and give feedback. And the cool thing about it was I was an actual wrestler in a office editing a wrestling company show, but I was the only wrestler. So I was able to give insight on things that they wouldn't have thought about before, if that makes sense.
Sure, you're doing a unique perspective.
They're,
yeah,
they're thinking about it from a wrestler's perspective, but mm-hmm. Now they had one in the office, so it's different.
Yeah, you're giving a perspective that, you know, that they wouldn't, you know, because none of them are, you know, probably, I wouldn't say never taken a bump, but probably taken a lot less bumps than you have. So you're a very valuable asset, I can imagine, to the people in the office.
I don't think there was a person in the office that had ever wrestled or had any experience with it that have come and gone, yes, but at the time I was there, no. Fans, yes, but being able to do that, it was a fun environment for the most part at the start, and then just getting able to learn and kind of going back, and it was cool because I was at the time, I wasn't expecting any job like this in wrestling. Then all of a sudden, boom, I had it within a week.
That's crazy. And they just packed you up and moved you to Nashville.
Yeah, I found out on a Sunday, or I got asked if I wanted to take the job on a Sunday. And then when I said yes, I moved on a Tuesday. So,
So how long, you know, when was this?
This was 2019.
2019.
A little bit. This was September 2019.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Yep.
So how long were you with Impact?
Like 4 months.
4 months. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha, okay.
I remember maybe not. I remember leaving January 6th, because I wrestled Lee Moriarty at SUP January 5th.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
On a Sunday. And I wrestled at New South the day before that. And I remember expressing my feelings about leaving the companies of the people I was in the car with heading to New South. I got on the show at New South, and I did well for what I was given. And then I remember mentally telling myself, okay, like if you're 21 years old, if you do good at this match and you do good on the show and they want to bring you back, quit Impact. And then if you suck, it was like, if you blow it, then you're just gonna have to be comfortable holding a camera while other people wrestle for the rest of your career. And that's the conversation I had with myself. And
I was at both those shows, and you killed it both those shows.
Oh, I forgot you were at the New South show.
Yeah, right. I was at both of them. Yeah
And so and that's when I was so very new to the area, which I still am, but I'm able to wrestle pretty consistently there, so it doesn't seem like it, but I am new and more so at that time. But being able to be confident in myself in a way and realize that if this is something I really want to do, I got to take it seriously, and I can hold a camera later on in life, but right now is the time for me to like really pursue being the wrestler that I want to be.
And Impact didn't agree with that. Is that that's the story?
For the most part, no.
Sure.
So the best way to explain it, after being able to think about it and there being some time, is I think there was a little miscommunication on what we both wanted. left. I was always very clear that I went to the wrestling school in Windsor to become a wrestler, or I was already a wrestler, but to better myself with wrestling. But then I ended up getting a production job because of that area and going to that school. It was great at the time because of my living situation and going back and forth, but when I realized that I think it hindered my career if I stayed, that's when I realized I had to get out. And there was never really a strong agreeing on me taking independent wrestling booking still. I think every time I shared a flyer for a wrestling show I was on that wasn't a date that I had to be on the road for Impact, I think there was a little bit of like slap on the wrist for it. And I remember being asked several times, like, I can't believe like you're still trying this wrestling thing. And I was like, well, yeah, that's why you met me.
It also doesn't hurt that you're a hell of a wrestler too.
It was interesting, but I'm not mad about anything. I think at first I was genuinely mad because I thought I was introduced to these people as a wrestler first, but now they don't see me as one. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit of a harsh feeling about that. But then you just kind of have to realize, like, if this is what I want to take seriously and this is what I want people to know me as, then I think I have to leave this production job to let people know how serious I'm trying to tell the world, no, that's not what I am. I'm a wrestler.
And just as you make that decision to become like a full-time wrestler, a pandemic hits.
Yeah, not too shortly after.
Yeah, because I remember seeing you at Action, and then that was shortly after, and then the pandemic hit shortly after that. I'm just like, man, poor Nolan, man, he's making a go of this.
Yeah, I had one Action show under my belt, mm-hmm. before pre-pandemic, mm-hmm. And then I was starting to like get pretty consistent at SUP in Nashville. Same with Paradigm. Mm-hmm. I was getting pretty consistent in areas that I was starting off at once I moved, and then it kind of halted.
So, you know, how does your mindset change, you know, during a pandemic? Where is your brain at, you know, over the last 6 months?
So when I was in film school, I was a screenwriting major. So that enlarged in my brain very detailed descriptions and look into this and like just get as much information as possible, because what I went to school for was to write. And so when that pandemic hit, I couldn't help but like sit down at a table and reevaluate everything. And I had like a notebook in front of me, and I would write bullet points and this and like, okay, what made you happy with wrestling when you were a kid? What made you want to do it? What aren't you doing that's like that? And I kind of had to reassess and sit down and remember what I wanted to do with wrestling, why I did it in the first place, and then come to find out I wasn't doing any of it. I think when the pandemic hit, I realized I was just trying to be like everybody else that was succeeding, but it wasn't. That's not what you want to do. You want to be as personable as possible. And so when shows started coming back up, I was able to take the time to tell myself, well, what makes you happy with wrestling? What do you want to do? What will you be content with? And it's more so now that I'm just who I am as a person, as a wrestler. Like, there's no difference now.
So that you just kind of, you know, the characters become you.
And I wouldn't even say it was so much of a character to begin with, just because I've always based wrestling off of real life stuff. Because when I was in film school, my writing teacher, the writing professor, gave me the greatest knowledge I think I will ever receive in my entire life. And it's not wrestling related, but I was trying to write. We had to write scripts, and like a short film script, a feature-length film script, a TV show script. And he didn't tell this to me specifically, but he said it to the class, and he said, if you're struggling writing something, take a look at it and think, well, am I funny? And if you say no, then you shouldn't write a comedy. And then it's like, he further explained saying, and this is what stuck with me, saying, you have to write what you know.
Makes sense.
And so when I, during that time, that break with the pandemic and wrestling, I thought, well, I don't wrestle with what I know. I wrestle with what I'm trying to be. And I, what I was trying to be was so fogged up because of the toxicity of showing up to all the Impact shows and not wrestling, and the toxicity of my living in, environment and stuff, and just trying to make everything work. So being able to reassess myself, I just had to keep telling myself, well, you can't force what you aren't. And it changed how I wrestle. It changed how I talked, which I don't really talk that much to begin with when it comes to wrestling. But it changed it for sure. And now I just approach it as, if I'm not doing something that genuinely makes me happy, I'm not going to put it out. If something doesn't make me happy, I'm not going to release it. Like, if I, like, so everything that does get seen and the way I wrestle, I try to just get the point across that I'm not a character. I don't like the word gimmick, but I'm not a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to let people, I just want to get the point across. And I guess I just have to say it enough to when it does, if it's not clearly visible, is whenever I am wrestling, I'm just happy to be there. And not a, I'm happy to be here so I don't care what happens, but more so a, I want people to realize that I'm doing what I've wanted to do and what I've lost a lot for after gaining so much. Like, I've sacrificed to get here in this moment. So that what you see is me genuinely in my place.
Yeah, one thing about you as a wrestler that I've really noticed is that you put, have such little regard for your own well-being, and you know, put your literal everything into your wrestling. And you know, you leave, if I think of any independent wrestler who leaves it all out on the line during a match, it's you. You know, probably more so than anyone on the scene right now. Is that your personality? You know, just throw it all out there?
I'd say so.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's like the wrestling way of saying, like, I'm an open book.
Mm-hmm.
How people always say, oh no, I'm an open book. I'll say, like, I'd say my, that's how much, that's how I'd explain it as a wrestling way. I don't really talk about myself that much when it comes to wrestling. I'd rather talk about other people and try to help other people with what I know. So whenever I have to describe myself, it's hard for me to say anything other than, well, oh, it's just me. We're like, okay, but what does that mean? So the best way I could put it is I just don't know when to stop because I don't want to.
Yeah, I know I'm getting 100% of all that you have during your matches.
Yes.
There's nothing held back. And I appreciate that so much about you. Because I you know, there's a lot of wrestlers where, you know, they're kind of giving you a half-ass, you know, attempt. There's no half-ass with you.
And I'm not the only wrestler that's way.
Oh, I know,
and that's
I know.
The selling point is a lot of wrestlers mm-hmm. will say, oh, when you watch, like, the wrestler promo, like, when you watch me, this is the, and I think it's dumb, because every wrestler, and maybe they're, and the ones that aren't, I'm not going to knock them, but it's just the, like, yes, I am 100% giving my all, but I'm not the only one that does that, and I want mm-hmm. people to realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very much so out mm-hmm. there with saying, I'm giving this my all, and if that means my body is going to get thrown into a brick wall 15 mm-hmm. times before I say, oh, not another one, so be it.
Yeah, you're one of the most die on your sword wrestlers too.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to go out there and, you know, give your all to that one particular match, and, you know, if your body is broken because of it, your body is broken because of it. But you're going to die on your sword during that match, most certainly. That is. That is my perception of you as a wrestler, you know, from the the sample size that I have seen.
I just want to, I have to remind myself that you never know when the last time you're going to wrestle is.
Mm-hmm.
And oh God, pandemic taught you that, right?
Yeah, totally.
But more so just anything else, any other element that could happen. You never know when, what match is going to be your last. So that, just treat it as if it is.
I want
to
go.
That's cliche to say, but I don't like trying to be cliche, but I don't know how other, any other way to put it.
I want to go into one match that I just saw you have, which delighted me to no end as a fan of extreme violence. But I want to go into your mindset going into it and during it and all that sort of stuff. You just had the most violent match in action wrestling history with Angelus Lane. You're just chopping you in the face and you're just beating the absolute crap out of each other. I've been to deathmatch shows this year, and that was the most violent match I've seen all year. Tell me about what goes into a match like that.
Not a lot.
Okay.
I had somebody ask me, and it was on Twitter the other day. I'm trying to remember it correctly without going to it, because I don't want to go and check it, but I'll get it for the most part. Mm-hmm. They said, it was my match with Kevin Ryan, because mm-hmm. it was the doubleheader. The match right before that. They said, you showcased some technical wrestling. We didn't know there was that side of you. Is there any other match that you can point in our direction that we can watch to watch technical wrestling from you? And I told him no. Because training in Canada and going to all the wrestling schools I've been to, can I do the wrestling basics, so to say? Yes. Can I chain wrestle? Yeah, I love it. But it's not what I want to go out there and do. And I'm very upfront with that. And it took me a little reevaluating again recently, where I realized I've been wrestling for 2.5 years, and am I content with a lot of it? No, not at all. I was trying to be a yes man for everybody else and trying to be what every other hot wrestler was trying to be at the time. So I wasn't content with what I was trying to do. So if I had to best describe what I want to do with wrestling, it's the Angelus match. So what goes into it is the question. I'd say nothing, because it's more so you just have to, that's me sticking to my guns, so to say. It's like, what style of wrestling? I don't know if you'd like, I don't know a style. I just want to wrestle that way. I want people to associate that match with me. There's not much thought that goes into it. It's just whatever you got to do when your music hits to hype yourself up, just do it, and then before you know it, you're in the ring and you just have to go.
And just sheer violence ensues.
Like, I don't mind getting hit. Mm-hmm. I actually like it. And
oh, that's evident. That's wildly evident.
And like, I invite it, if that makes sense. And yeah, I guess I sound crazy when I listen to myself mm-hmm. saying this, but it's the truth. Like, I want people to hit me, and if they won't, I'll let them know. And I'm not tough. I'm not trying to be a hard ass. I've gone through so much to be able to be in that ring that I'm not going to waste my time putting you in a wrist lock. Let me just, to be completely honest. Like, I've fought to be able to fight, and now's the time that I get to do it, and I don't know how long I'm going to be able to do it for, so I have to make the most out of it.
And you're saying this at 22 years old?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's awesome.
I terrified people once because I told them when I was 21, I wrote a will. And I update a will every year. Because you don't know what, you never know what's going to happen. I'm a big believer in, like, I could walk to the street and walk down the street to the store and something chaotic happened. So I'm very much blunt in that case.
Sure. That's fatalistic, man. But hey, that's carpe diem, man. Seize the day.
it's terrifying to think about. That's, because of 22.
You're like, 22. You like, I'm 37, shot. And I'm just like, you know, very, you know, very risk averse, and you're just like 22, and I'm just like, I'm gonna get chopped in the face today, and I'm gonna write a will.
Yeah.
Woo. All right. Well, I mean, people do need to go out of their way and see that match. It is maybe my favorite match this year. You can hear me hooting and hollering in the background during that match because I was just in so much joy during it. I loved that match so much. It might have been my favorite match in action history.
That's amazing to hear. Oh. But a lot of people say it's the most violent, or since it hasn't been released as of today, when the podcast gets released, I could be wrong, but a lot of people are saying it's the most violent match in action history. But you also got to realize what action was. We haven't done something like that at action, as to my knowledge.
Oh, I've been at every action show except for one, I think. And action's not that sort of promotion, but still, I mean, they've had. I mean, there's again, we're talking sample size here. There's a good, you know, selection of matches there. It's a hell of a match. It's a hell of a match.
I don't talk a lot in this case about my matches, but I've never gone out to say like anything about my matches mm-hmm. specifically. I'll promote them because that's our job. Like, promote what we've mm-hmm. done, promote what we do. So I will say that, but my favorite match I've ever had was that Angelus match.
Nice.
I've been wrestling 2.5 years and I'm not content with anything, but that's the first time I was content with how I wrestled. And nothing's perfect. And people are saying it's the most violent match in action history. And I agree it's the most violent match in action history if that's what they want to say. I'm not saying that, but if that's what people want to say, I'll believe them because I know, just like you, there's other people that have been there at every show.
Yeah, me and Dave have been there. Me and Dave are the ones who came up with that, and me and Dave have been there for every show. So, yeah, I mean, it's...
Right, so yeah. I've got no choice but to take your guys' word for that. But that was not violent to me.
It was violent to the rest of us, brother.
People say that's the most violent match they've seen at that company. I literally told people, I said, how? That was nothing.
it was wonderful. I enjoyed every bit of it. I also enjoyed your match. Speaking of violence in matches I've seen you in, you know, you and Koo at Paradigm was, way up there on the violence scale as well. You guys just beat the absolute tar out of each other, and it was wonderfully enjoyable to watch.
Now that I agree with, yeah, that's right up there with the Angelus match too.
Yeah. Yeah, and those are both, you know, during a pandemic, and that's you, you know, that we talked about you, you know, deciding who you are as a wrestler. I think you really come into your own, you know, like you talked about, you know, during the pandemic, you've decided who you are and, you know, what you're going to be, and, you know, these few matches you've had, you know, during the pandemic, you know, you've shown out completely.
It's cool because there are certain companies that are able to run during this time when others aren't mm-hmm. that I've been available to the entire time, or I've been able to wrestle at for quite a while, like Paradigm, that in a world where independent wrestling is so important to so many people and it's not saturated right now, because not every company is running.
Mm-hmm.
So the companies that are, there's that many more eyes on them. And so I couldn't have picked at a better time who I want to be. Like, what I am, what I stand for as a person, as a man, because I'm a strong believer that I'm a man before a pro wrestler. Will always be a human being before I was a pro wrestler. And so I have to remind myself that, which I think that's why I have the approach to wrestling that I do, but I also think that's why I wrestle the way I wrestle. Which, that's just more evident now because there's more eyes on me because I'm wrestling on the few shows that are able to run.
So speaking of shows that are able to run, what is your plan going forward? Are you on the collective? Are you... do you have plans going forward for Paradigm? What's your schedule going forward?
I do have plans as far as it goes for Paradigm, because I will be completely out there and up front and admit that Paradigm's my home promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a show for Paradigm, I'm going to be there. And so whatever they do with me, if I don't earn my spot anymore and they stop using me, that's their decision. But I'm going to do everything I can to stay there and be on every show, because I do believe in myself there. So as far as my future for Paradigm, I intend on being at everything Paradigm related. Collective, I have two shows, one confirmed match so far. For Southern Underground Pro on day one of the Collective, which is the 9th, October 9th, against the returning AJ Gray to Southern Underground Pro, which he has a wild...
I'm so looking forward to that, by the way.
Right, which he has a wild history in SUP. And so to be the return match, I'm very excited for that. And then the Paradigm show is the last day of the Collective, which is the 11th, and it's actually the last show. It's at 11:30 at night. And it's unaware what a lot of us are doing on the show as of right now. But whatever capacity I'm in on that show, I just plan on dying at that show. So...
And then if any promoters are listening to this, you have an open rest of the weekend, and you should be on every damn show because I said so, because you're an unbelievable damn wrestler, and you will bring everything you have to a show. So please, book Nolan Edward. Book Nolan Edwards.
They don't have to book me. It's not... If I don't get booked, I don't get booked. Either way, I've got the two shows that I'm very thankful to be on, and I'm able to be there for the rest of the weekend and watch wrestling. And that is all I would want to do that weekend, is wrestle and watch wrestling.
All right. Well, I'll be there, and I want to see one more show, damn it. So.
Get the most out of these two. If there's more, there's more.
Well, I'll be,
I won't refuse it, but get the most out of
I'll be front two. Row, and I'll be cheering you on. You know that.
Heck yes.
With my girlfriend, actually, who's been to 4 wrestling shows in her life but wants to come to the Collective, so that'll be real fun.
Oh, boy, she's...
She's in for it. She is in for it. So what else do you have coming forward? Do you have anything else you could announce? Or
October, as far as everything that's already announced, there's not much else to announce other than when I find out what I'm doing on the Paradigm Collective show. But September 25th, I'm wrestling Dominic Guarini at the Paradigm 3rd anniversary, which is live streamed on IWTV.
Can't wait
the
for
next
that.
Day. Right, I'm excited for that one as well. The next day, I'm wrestling Logan Stunt at Unsanctioned Pro, and they're live streaming as well for the first time on IWTV for them. And then the next day, I got 3 shows that weekend. The next day, on the 27th, I'll be wrestling Sage Phillips at New Wave Pro Presents Complex Pro.
Cool.
And then the weekend after that, October 2nd, I will be wrestling JD Drake at Action.
Yeah, then, that's going to be a banger.
And I've recorded JD's matches ringside, so to be able to kind of like what I've said and everything, so now the fact that I'm in the ring for something like that, I need to make the most out of it. It's not a want, it's a need.
I was so excited when that got announced, too. Like, I was just like, yeah, this is just going to be an ass beater. This is going to be the two guys beat the shit out of each other.
And I also can't die that day as much as I'd be okay with it, because the next day, I have the Action Future Showcase, which I'm very thankful is running, because I was a part of the Futures tournament pre-COVID, and then it got canceled. So now that it's back and to still be a part of it, I'm very excited for. And then there's a TWE show after that I'm also a part of, and Collective's the weekend after that. So that's everything coming
you're
up.
You're my projected winner for that, by the way.
There's a lot of people in that tournament that I don't know. And so I'm going to have to, like, actually watch it. And that's, like, something that I just do regularly. And so there's a lot of people on that tournament that I've never even heard of. And there's a lot of people that I have. So I'm hoping to wrestle everybody. There's people that I want to wrestle in the tournament. But there's also everybody that I don't know that I'm like, oh, God, what am I getting myself in for?
Alex Kane is very good, by the way.
I know Alex. Know Alex. And I was happy to see he got announced.
Yeah, he's very skilled.
Yep, I met him during my time working for Evolve when he would show up with AR because he's an AR Fox student. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Which he doesn't wrestle like an AR Fox student.
No, mm-hmm. And I'm... Even if he did, he'd mm-hmm. be a great wrestler.
Yeah. But... he's like, he wrestles like Kurt Angle, basically.
And that's... We need more of that.
It's badass. It's badass. It's totally badass. So if people want to get in touch with you, if people want to book you, how do they get in touch with you?
They can reach out to me on any social media. All my, like, my Twitter and Instagram is both the same. It's @_NolanEdward. No S. Everybody thinks my last name is Edwards.
It's not.
Because of guys like Eddie Edwards and O'Shea Edwards and all these Edwards in pro wrestling. But it's not. It's just Edwards. It's not. It's my middle name.
Nolan Edward.
Nolan Edward. And so I get into a lot of fights with graphic guys about that. But you can follow me @_NolanEdward at anything. That's where I tell people to reach out if they were looking at getting information out of me, because email is irrelevant at this stage in life, I think.
It is. It just clogs up. That's all it does.
I've got one. Yeah. I've got one, but I don't know.
Yeah. Just hit them in the DMs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Nolan, thank you so much for appearing on the show. We appreciate it. We are rooting for you. And we will see you very, very soon.
Thank you, Ben. I'll see you and your girlfriend first row, first seat. Yeah. Well, first and second. First and second. She can't. You guys can't share social distancing. Social distancing.
No, we'll see. We'll definitely see you on the third.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Later, man. On the Place Me Nation Wrestling Network, on newest PTB NXT, Tim, Jenny, and Jay continue their tradition of new gimmick names and cover the very first NXT TakeOver event. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Sean Kidd joins Scott and the Doctor to recap the first episode of UWN Primetime Live, streaming issues and all. The newest Ride Down Highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and the gang look at the seventh episode of Impact, the weekly pay-per-view 104. The newest mega event of NWA Croc and Roll, Sean Callum and the Doctor, with Keith Hughes to recap the great Crockett programming from June 85. The newest episode of Wrestling Chicken Salad, Ben Luck and the guys head back in time to discuss the atrocity that is Fall Brawl 99. Please rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Just search PHB Nation Wrestling Network. Check out the Pop feed with shows that include The Urine Pop, Laughing Theater, Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. And check out The Jenny Position, Home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive, and Brother Sister Rewatch, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. And North South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Aaron's Wrestling, The Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrinkwrapped, and more. We kicked off our 2020 Stretch Project, which is the greatest WCW match ever. Go to facebook.com/GWCWmatches or the Pro Wrestling Only message board. We have the greatest song from movie tournaments kicked off. Go to placementnation.com every single day. We have new voices or fresh takes, bringing you articles and topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent SmackDown and Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And if you're doing shopping on Amazon.com, be sure to click on the banner on the right side of placementnation.com. Use placementnation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon, helps us out with no cost to you. While you're there, pick up a copy of longtime listener Adrian Cotton's second book, AWO Big Time Players, Episode 2, Continuing to Grow. It's a vivid description of the second episode of Alpha Wrestling Organization's program, Big Time Players. It's available as an ebook and paperback. You can get both episodes 1 and 2 in a paperback form for $15.98. Don't worry about